We now welcome on the Sports Mix one of our colleagues, really, from Hertfordshire's Mix 92.6. You'll know him as Lee Canderton on a Wednesday afternoon. Others may know him by another name, which we'll come on to in a second. Lee, welcome to the studio. Lovely to see you.
It's lovely to be here.
Yeah, and we're here really to talk about your 40 years in professional wrestling, and which is a fantastic achievement, I think, for you, but also to be in the industry, which has been, it's had some ups and downs, and it's going to be great to reflect on that, if that's all right.
Yeah, it's changed quite a lot since I first started, and people do come and go, but not many of us have constantly have been there for as long as I have. So, as they say, I've seen a few changes over the years.
Indeed. So tell us, 40 years ago, how did it start? Was this a plan? I've got to get into professional wrestling, or did it just fall upon you?
I think it started like most people who are interested in sport, that you liked it, followed it, watched it on the telly, went to see it live as a paying customer. And those were the days of, you know, World of Sport, when it was on ITV 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, and I used to love watching that as a kid. It was the combination of sport but with a bit of entertainment thrown in, so that's what attracted me to it. So I've always wanted to be, I never wanted to be a wrestler, I was never that good, but I did want to be a referee. So, you know, I used to, my heroes back then were the referees of that time, and I used to jump around as a kid, jump around the front room shouting and being a referee and all this sort of thing. And so when I eventually worked as a Butlin's red coat, that's how it really started. And they had wrestling on there. They wanted a red coat to compare it. And I asked if I could do it because I watched it and wanted to be involved.
Oh, I see.
So, I knew a little bit more than some of the other red coats. So that's how it started. I got in the ring and compared it. And because I sort of didn't take the mickey out of it quite so much as some of the others might have done, the promoter said, yeah, you've got an idea of what we're about. You know, do you want to come and do a town show for us, a proper show, not just a holiday centre show? So that's how it really started.
And that's, we're talking about early 80s, 85?
85, yeah. 85. Yeah, I was a reco at Butlin's in Bognor for 2 years, 85 and 86. And that was a bit of luck, because the promoter of the Butlin shows was a guy called Brian Dixon, who ran All Star Promotions.
Yes.
At that time, the TV on ITV was presented by a company called Joint Promotions, which was run by Max Crabtree.
Yeah.
But it was at the time of changeover, and Brian was trying to get the contract for ITV. At that time when I first started, so he was an independent promoter, but he got the contract. So in the last few years of ITV wrestling, he shared it with Joint Promotions, with Max Crabtree. So joints were coming down a little bit, and All-Star were coming up. We were getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So I kind of, by default of just being in the right place at the right time, joined the company that was getting bigger and getting more high profile.
Wow, that's interesting. So even, I mean, people who follow American wrestling will know that there was the WWF or WWE and WCW, sort of the rival wars. There was a little bit of that in the 80s then, with different companies over here in the UK.
It was, yeah, because Joint Promotions, I mean, down south where we are, if you watched it on the telly or went to see it at places like St Albans at the City Hall, the company was called Dal Martin Promotions, and you see it on the corner pads. And say Max Crabtree ran it. And by the mid-80s, yeah, things were waning a little bit for his company, and Brian Dixon's All-Star were coming up. And there was a time where some of the big halls, like Croydon, the Fairfield Hall of Bristol, you'd have 1 month it would be them, and 1 month it would be us.
Oh, right.
And there was, at one stage, it's much better now, but at one stage there was a bit of rivalry. And, you know, and you go out and... some people would go out and take their posters down and put ours up. And all that kind of thing used to happen a little bit as well. So, yeah.
And would wrestlers change between the companies, or would they stay very much within their own camp?
That was the thing that changed, because in the mid-80s, a lot of wrestlers have made their name on the TV for one reason or another, and I'm not completely certain why, but they were getting disillusioned. And I think Brian was saying, well, come and work for us. So you had all the big names, like Mark Rocco, if you remember him from those days.
Yeah, he's down on my list here.
And Fit Finley and the mighty John Quinn, who was this big North American who came over. And Johnny Saint, the world lightweight champion. They all left joint promotions and came over to All-Star. So again, I was with the company that were having all the big names that I'd watched as a kid on the telly. And here I was introducing them and refereeing them and that sort of stuff.
Wonderful, wonderful. And all under the name Bamba.
Yes.
So Lee Bamba.
That's right.
So
yeah.
Lee Bamba. So where did this come from? And were you advised not to use your own name? How did this come about?
No, it was a weird, nothing to do with an ego. I didn't think, oh, I know, I must change my name because I'm in showbiz now, love. No, it wasn't that. It was just when I started, Brian Dixon, the promoter, meets so many people and you can never completely remember my name. He thought I had a passing resemblance to Bamba Gascoigne from University Challenge. So when I saw him, you go, hello, Bamba, how are you? And that kind of is, hello, Bamba. And I just answered to Bamba. That was it. It meant affectionately, but it was just, how are you doing, Bamba? But then later on, when we got to do more and more high profile shows, and we did a TV show, and so we had to give all the detail to the production people. So Lee Bamba was kind of born, and it stuck, and I've been that ever since. So it wasn't me that changed it or wanted it. It was just that passing resemblance to Bamba Gascoigne.
Well, your starter for 10.
Yes.
We could say. So one of the big things that people often talk about is wrestling or professional wrestling. The difference between amateur wrestling, because there is a difference, isn't it? Amateur wrestling we may see in the Olympics, and it's sort of it's a sort of Olympic Greco. I've probably got it wrong there, but what is the main difference?
Yeah, I mean, amateur wrestling is very much like judo or taekwondo, right, yep. Or you know, it's a martial art. It's an Olympic sport, as you say. Whereas professional wrestling is sport / entertainment. Mm. And our version of that, I mean, if you want to turn the history books right back, it started off back in the music hall days with some of the very big acts, and like when you see the Royal Variety performance, or sometimes you need something while they change the set and while they get the next big production on. So they used to get two beefy guys to wrestle each other and show strength and lift weights, and you know, it didn't need that much room for it, but it became more and more entertaining, and he'd pick him up and throw him all the back and all this kind of stuff. So it became slightly comedic, but it filled 5 or 6 minutes until the next act came on.
I never realized
so
that
you kind of strongman wrestling but with showbiz kind of started there.
Because I still get the impression that people don't really understand it. And I wonder over the 40 years, how many times you've had this conversation with people where people have gone, oh, it's not real, it's, you know, it's fake. And you're like, I know. that must have happened a lot.
People don't mind so much. Now, when I started again, back in the days of what we call the Lord Mount Evans wrestling. He was the man that brought it through Parliament to have proper rules and rounds, and the referee was in charge of the old-style British wrestling. And so that was viewed as a legitimate sport, and a lot of the boys used to get quite annoyed if people would be very sceptical about it, because although there was showbiz and showmanship in it, it was still capable of belief. Now, with all the American stuff, it is showbiz and lights and glitz and glamour and costume, and it's a storyline, but people don't care anymore as long as they enjoy it. So you look at the American wrestling nowadays, and it's just completely different. Mm. And even the British wrestlers now, you know, when I was around, when I first started, they were the good athletes, but they were also the big guys as well that, you know, wouldn't be flipping and doing quadruple somersaults and all this kind of stuff. It was more of a storyline of, you know, that sort of thing. But now you get the young guys, the teenage guys in the early 20s, and they're flying about all over the place. It's more like parkour. It's, you know, it's mind-boggling.
Well, being in the ring with them, it must have your wits about you, must you? Because they're coming from every angle.
Yeah, now that's the art of refereeing, is to have an idea of where they're going next and make sure you're out the way. Because, yeah, you can get in the way, you can get hurt, and you can also ruin some of their moves as well. So, yes, you think, OK, he's over there, he's going to throw him over this way in a minute. Here he comes, move.
That's it. So I'm intrigued by that. So what, in the process, because it is entertainment and it is about storytelling, as you've just said, how much, as the referee, are you in on perhaps the discussion before the bout takes place of what's going to happen, the end, the finish? You know, because you play a role, the referee plays a key role in it as well.
Yeah, yeah. And again, in the old days, when you had two talented classical wrestlers, if you remember back in the old sort of 70s and 80s, people like Steve Gray and Johnny Saints, they were good technical wrestlers. And as a referee, you would say, you wouldn't work everything out, they'd just have a match. But you would say, are you doing anything I need to know about, just in case? And they'd just say, no, we'll just play it by ear when we get in, just do it. So they didn't rehearse anything at all. It all came naturally. They knew what they were doing. Now some of the newer guys get in the ring earlier on and go through a few moves to make the spectacular stuff look spectacular, because, you know, if they want to, because when you're doing a show, two of you are very much involved, you know, and one guy could be on top, but it's the other guy that, you know, it's a ballet, if you like, you know, you're against another guy, but if the other guy doesn't know or doesn't want to play along, if you like, the whole thing's ruined. So you've got to, it's the two guys doing it together.
Exactly. And I know a lot of people talk about selling, and it is how you sell the moves, isn't it? That if somebody throws you in a certain way, you've got to sell it to make sure it looks effective, to make the other guy look good, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's nothing worse than a guy picking another guy up, throwing him around, and the other guy just gets up and goes, what? You know, you've got to make it look, you know, and that's what brings the crowd up. That's what the kids love as well, you know. And then you want the good guy to get his own back on what's just been done to him and all this sort of thing. So, yeah, it is pantomime, but they are very, very fit athletes, and the stuff that they do in that ring is amazing. And they do get hurt, but yeah, it's quite a talent.
Indeed. And just talking about those World of Sport years, because the World of Sport was such an institution, as you say, you grew up watching it. I remember growing up watching it sort of 4 o'clock-ish on Saturday afternoon before it was Final Score would come on. You'd sit and watch the wrestling. And it must have been really exciting for you then to be part of that. But were they pre-recorded? How did it work?
Yeah, they were. We'd do a show with about 6 matches in it, and then it was chopped in half, so you get 3 on one Saturday afternoon and then the other 3 a few weeks later, and normally you'd record it, say, I don't know, the end of May, and it would go out last week of June, first week of July or something like that. So they were pretty close, but they weren't the next week. They'd go away and edit it so that it fitted in with the timings for World of Sport, because World of Sport finished in back in the mid-80s, and wrestling carried on as a standalone program for 3 years until it eventually went in 1988. So I got involved just in time before that went. But yes, it was chopped in half, and we got 2 shows out of one event.
And did you find that there was still a lot of reach? Would people recognise you and speak to you about it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. There was still a big following. I think that's why, you know, when World of Sport did go, because it was, as you say, a legendary part of it, 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. Then it went to a Saturday all sorts of times, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock or whatever, yes, for about 3 years. And eventually it was Greg Dyke who took it off. He took it off in 88. He sort of thought he wanted a different image for ITV. So UK wrestling went in 1988. The very last one ever recorded was in Rickmansworth. So it was
here in Hertfordshire.
At the Watersmeet, yeah.
All right. So let's talk about some of those names, because some of those famous names. We'll start with probably one of the most famous names that people would know, Big Daddy. And you mentioned Max a little bit earlier on.
Yeah.
And of course, his brother was the Shirley Grantry, yes. which was I always find incredible, but was this big, burly superhero, really.
Yeah.
But that wasn't always the case, was it? He had been a bit of a bad guy, I think, earlier on. But when you would have been working with him, he was this superhero, was he?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is with Big Daddy, because he was Max's brother, and the third brother, Brian, was the referee, Brian Crabtree.
Oh, yes.
Brian is still with us, but sadly Max and Shirley aren't anymore. So Shirley started as... He was a solid wrestler at first, but it was originally Max brought him in with this Big Daddy character, mainly because another wrestler at that time, just a bit earlier, a guy called Tommy Billington, a Dynamite Kid.
Yes, yes.
Max was building him up, and he was a big, big hero, and he was going to do very well. And then he went off to America. He was lured over into the States, which kind of... it made it awkward for Max, because this big star had gone. So what he decided to do then is to build up his own brother, because he thought, well, he's not going to go away. So the kind of Big Daddy character of being this super good guy that everyone would, you know, would love and applaud, yeah, took off. And so that's Max was able to keep Daddy under yeah, contract, if you like.
I always found it incredible because, as you just said, building up a character, again, that storytelling comes into it. The promoter, again, is quite the power maker, the king maker, really, within all of that. So, Big Daddy, what was he like to work with?
Well, the thing is, with I've met him and I've shaken his hand and I've chatted to him, but I never worked with Daddy because, being a Crabtree, he was... working for the other lot, for the Dal Martin, yeah, promotions. He never crossed over. He stayed with Max and Dal Martin's and joint promotions. So I never actually worked with him as such. However, I did work with Giant Haystacks.
And he's next on my list, because Giant Haystacks, I'm intrigued by. And I went into a bit of a YouTube rabbit hole the other day and was watching some Giant Haystacks footage. And, of course, a very sad ending to him. But a lot of people said, what a gentle, lovely, kind, calm man he was. But when he got into that ring, he was just a beast, wasn't he?
Yeah. And that's where he felt most at home, because when you're that size, you know, and as the years went on, he got heavier and heavier. He was billed at 6'11" and 42 stone, used to introduce him as. So in a wrestling ring, it's like anybody who is so large and such a character, you feel at home there, because that's where you belong. It's walking down the high street or trying to get on an aeroplane or whatever, where you would feel very self-conscious about it. So he could do his stuff in the ring, and that's where he felt at his best. But yeah, he was a lovely man, softly spoken, a nice guy. We were in Croydon one night, the Fairfoot Hall in Croydon, and he had his own dressing room because he had so much gear and stuff. And I went in to make sure he was all right and ready to go, and he was opening a window, waffling a towel about, not aggressively, just because Martin was his real. I said, Martin, what are you doing? He said, there's this big butterfly, I'm trying to get out the window. And I thought, that's exactly, a giant haystack is trying to shush a butterfly out the window.
That real contrast then between the character. Well, as I say, if they're putting on a show, it's not the real person there in the ring. They're playing a character and playing a role. But yeah, he just portrayed that so well. And it was a sad ending, because is it right that he went over to America and had an opportunity at some bigger money, but then was diagnosed with cancer while he was over there?
That's right, yes. They billed him as the Loch Ness Monster over there, and he went over there and did a few shows, but yes, he got the cancer diagnosis. So he could have done a bit longer over there, but he didn't really want to. He wanted to come back, you know, and be back in Britain. And eventually, he lost quite a lot of weight, and eventually passed on from it. But yes, he would have been a very, very big star over there, I think.
Yeah, but one of those people, when people talk about wrestling from that era, Big Daddy, Giant Haystacks always springs to mind, probably for the common man, but more of the connoisseurs might say people like Mick McManus as well.
Mm-hmm.
So did you work with Mick?
Yes. Mick was an interesting guy. I was lucky enough to see him when I was young. He'd retire before I'd actually started, but because the name, he would do personal appearances and bits and pieces. And one of my sort of happiest moments is when I first started the promoter, when it went off the TV, and this is 1988, All-Star Promotions decided, I know what we can do. We can have a show and we'll put it on video because you can't see it on the telly anymore. So this probably might sell quite well. And they called it the Mick McManus World of Wrestling. So they got Mick in to do the commentary. And I was they asked me if I'd be a co-commentator with Mick.
Oh, brilliant.
And that was on the Fairfield Hall in Croydon. And I think I cost them quite a lot of money because the day before I completely lost my voice. And worse than just losing the voice, everything closed up in the throat. I couldn't speak, I couldn't swallow, I couldn't drink. So I went down there just to do a few camera shots and wave at them from the commentary box. And then I got back in the car, drove home and went to bed while the show went on. And we had to voice it all about 3 weeks later when I got my voice back.
Oh, wow.
In a studio somewhere, as if it was live. And it was supposed to be live. We're supposed to be doing it at ringside, but I couldn't do it that night. So we had to do it all again. But yeah, Mick was a really nice guy.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier, though, Mark Rollerball Rocco.
Yeah.
And now, so he was another one that when I was looking into all of this, you mentioned that you worked with him, but he travelled the world as well. And he was really quite an innovator, wasn't he, of the wrestling scene, and went to really sort of real high levels and was really highly thought of.
Yeah, a lot of people think that he was, you know, ahead of his time. You see the kind of stuff that they're doing now, both here and in America. But at the time, in the 70s and 80s, the Rollerball was doing all that high flying, solid stuff, and everyone was saying, you know, wow, this is some of the matches he had. People who remember those World of Sport days always say that the matches with him and Marty Jones were the best matches that, you know, ever on ITV wrestling. He was brilliant the way he flew about and took all the punishment, and you know, he'd cut his head open and still carry on. I'm all right, I'm going to carry on, and all this sort of thing. So, yeah. He was a joker as well, though.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, because he lived not that far away from Haystacks. They both came from Salford in Manchester. And when they took the car back home, they took it in turns to drive. And you imagine Haystacks had to be a fairly big car. But Haystack used to fall asleep a lot. He used to doze off even when he was driving. So Mark was driving on this occasion, drove right into the middle of Salford. There's a busy, busy crossover. There's about a few roads that cross over in Salford. Parked the car right in the middle of the road. Got out left and just left Haystacks there, snoozing away until a traffic warden discovered him in the middle of this big, busy high street. Yeah.
Probably one of the people you wouldn't want to upset, but he didn't seem to mind. I always have a memory of him competing against somebody called Sammy Lee when I was a child. Sammy Lee was a massive star, wasn't he, worldwide?
Yes, yeah, he was very good, wasn't he? He would, again, one of the very first. We had a couple of Japanese stars come over, but Sammy came over in the early 80s. And again, he was one of these high-flying martial arts guy when there wasn't that many of them around. He was absolutely superb. And you go on with someone like Mark Rocco and Sammy Lee, and it's definitely a case of, you know, light the blue touch paper and stand back. You know?
Of course. From the era as well, did you work with Kendo Nagasaki?
Yes.
So there's a mystery, a real mystery man. And we were talking earlier about the difference between, say, Giant Haystacks in the ring and outside of the ring. But with Kendo Nagasaki, didn't it, the sort of mystique continued?
He was the ultimate Nagasaki. He's still around. And he still makes personal appearances. He's going to be at Croydon in July, so he's still around. But yeah, he would take it to the, you know, extreme. He wouldn't let anybody get near him. He wouldn't speak to anyone. He'd go into the shower at the end of his match, still with the mask on.
Oh, really?
Change into another mask because that one would now be very wet, and then get in the car and drive home. Or at least Lawrence, who was responsible for taking him everywhere, would drive, and he'd make sure that he was about 5 miles away from the hall before the mask came off, just in case he stopped at traffic lights or whatever. He was like the ultimate professional of keeping that image.
So even with his competitors and the referees as well, he would keep that mystique?
It depends who he was on with. It was a case, I mean, a lot of the people in wrestling thought, well, this is a bit silly, isn't it, for goodness sake. Kind of. But, yeah, he was determined to keep up that image that he'd honed over the years, because, you know, he started back in about 1963.
Wow.
So he took a couple of gaps, but he came back and in the late 80s into the 90s before he finally had his last proper competitive match. I say that because he has come back and had a go, because now he's trying to get in the Guinness Book of Records as being the oldest professional wrestler. He's 83 now.
Wow.
And he did do a show at Croydon back in April of this year, where he wrestled for a little while. So, yes. So he's still very much alive and kicking.
And so tell us, when that World of Sport era came to an end, as you said, they were moving it around the schedule, 4 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock, so, which is no good because people don't know when it's on and people like to know where they are. You were very much involved when it came off TV. Did you think that was it, or was there still, you were still keen to be involved, and what did you think was going to happen to the future of it then?
Yeah, it was a sad day. We didn't know. As I say, Brian Dixon had this idea for a video, so we thought that might lead to something, and then we thought, well, maybe Sky might pick it up and run with it. And for a couple of years, it was still okay because people had their memories of the TV, so posters with names on still meant something. But without that TV coverage to push it, and without the storylines, some of the boys retired, some moved on, some carried on. The show still carried on. It dipped for a while. It seemed to lose momentum a little bit. Then we had the American stuff starting, coming over. So, you know, anybody who was born after about 1990, for instance, really is the American stuff they would know, and that once the American stuff took hold, it had a bit of a resurgence. A lot of people would then take their children, you know, if they'd grown up with the World of Sport stuff, they take their children and say, oh, you know, it was different in my day, but they were back watching shows again.
Because I'm intrigued by that, whether or not the influence of WWF as it was back then in the 90s and WCW, was it a hindrance, and was it the nail in the coffin for British wrestling, or was it actually, looking at it now in 2025, was it actually a bit of a watering of a seed, because there seem to be so many British wrestlers now that are part of this global phenomenon?
Yeah, it was amazing the way it took off. There was a bit of resentment from your die-hard fans. There was, you know, they'll say, well, this isn't what we grew up with, because even as people get older and their tastes change, you know, you might support Chelsea when you were young, but at least when you're 30 and 40, but when you're 50 or 60, you can still support Chelsea. They still play football. It's all the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas British wrestling completely changed, or the wrestling scene completely changed. So a lot of people look back on the old days affectionately, and there's still all the clips on YouTube and everything. You can, there's a lot of matches on YouTube. You can have a look at them. So the American stuff came over, and then the kids started getting into that. So it was a rebirth. But if you were around when I started in the old days, you still carry that with you. You know, I still have that in the back of my mind all the time.
But you kept going with the British scene right the way through, and say till now, doing many, many shows. Give us some examples. And now I've seen, because I've seen on your social media, there's sort of clips of you in Norwich City Stadium doing shows. And so there have been big shows as well that you've been part of.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with me, really. It's a case of the phone rings and people say, well, you know, would you like to do this show or that show? The Norwich one was special, because that was at Carrow Road. I mean, that was a big one. I think the biggest one I've ever done, because you'd put a wrestling show in a football stadium. That was a very hot afternoon. and it was a great show to do, so I was lucky to be involved in that. And yeah, the shows still continue. We still do them both locally and all. I'm only usually go up to about as far as the Midlands. Some of the boys travel up further, but they, you know, it becomes expensive just to get the MC to come that far.
Of course. And in that time, we said about, I was talking before we started recording about sort of transition stars, I called them. And you mentioned sort of, I think, one of the very first ones in Tommy Billington. Mm. But there's been many others that have started over here, treading the boards of All Star and other promotions that you've refereed that have gone on to be massive stars over in America.
Yeah, big ones. I think I did about the first four matches that Sheamus ever did. He worked with us and then went over to America and did very well.
And could you tell, like, someone like him, did he have the makings? Do you think, yeah, he's set for the American scene? He's got that body, he's got that look. Did you think, yes, he's odds on for
you
that?
You can tell to a certain degree. I mean, there is a lot of work to be done. When you get to America, they then mould you into what they want you to become, largely. but you can see the professionalism within a lot of them.
Yeah.
And again, Daniel Bryan, or Bryan Danielson,
yes,
as he was with us, he started with us, and he loved coming over and doing the UK stuff. That's where he learnt a lot and took that over to America and did very well over there. Nick Aldis is another one. That's phenomenal over in America. And more recently, if you go bang up to date, and we're so pleased she's doing well, because again, she started with us at All Star and a few other promotions. Timeless Tony Storm.
Oh,
Timeless,
yes.
Tony Storm, an Australian girl, but she was over in Britain for a long and learnt, and you could see in her that there was something special. And now the character of Timeless Tony in America is absolutely huge now.
It's incredible, actually. I didn't have this down, but you sort of just mentioned that. Women's wrestling seems to be a massive phenomenon at the moment. Was that always the case?
It was a novelty at first, but then the credibility kicked in, because you thought, there are some really good wrestlers here, some girl wrestlers. And again, when I started, there was always a good versus evil. There was a bit like the Big Daddy sort of thing. You had some of the girls that, because nowadays you look at the American stuff, you've got people like, you know, Liv Morgan, and there's so many of them that actually look gorgeous as well. That's the whole image. We had Klondike Kate.
Yes.
We had Klondike Kate. It was fantastic. And again, a great character wrestler. ITV weren't keen. Joint Promotions, Max Crabtree used the girls a little bit, but they never really had a girls' match on the telly. They weren't too keen. And up until, when was it, about 1987, girl wrestling, ladies wrestling in London wasn't allowed. The GLC, as it was then, banned female wrestling. So if you had a hall in London, if you were at Lewisham, Walthamstow, or anywhere within the GLC area, you could put on... Kendo Nagasaki can come along and be mysterious and weird, and Haystacks and people like that, but they wouldn't allow girls wrestling at all until about 1987, and then they
equality kicked in.
Yeah, equality kicked in.
Equality kicked in.
They let the girls in.
So looking back on these 40 years, is it possible, or is it too hard to say, who's the best wrestler that you've officiated, or the best match you've officiated, shall we say? Or is that just so hard?
It's very difficult. You can look at wrestlers now and think, yes, they're going to be big. There's a tag team, two British guys that went over to Japan recently, and they are fantastic. Mark True and Kieran Lacey. True and Lacey. If you get a chance to see them anywhere, they are absolutely fantastic. And they are going to set the world alight in a year or so. Yeah. And again, with both of them, you were saying earlier, you could look at them and think, okay, you know, with a bit more training and a few more months under them, that they're going to be really big. So yeah, watch out for them. True and Lacey are very good. And then you got there's a guy called James Farrell, who done some training at the legendary Wigan Snake Pit. That's a well-known wrestling school,
right,
where they put you through all sorts of pain and torture, and that's a very respected school. And he's been there, and There's a guy called Levi Muir as well, another one to keep an eye on, because there are a lot of good stars coming up that are going to be very big in a few years.
Wow. And what about going to venues? Because I would have thought that the venue makes wrestling as well. The feel of the crowd and the whole atmosphere and the setting. And do you have a favourite place to go?
If they've got good lighting and good sound, for me, it's good. Yeah. So some of the theatres are very good. The Auburn Arena is a good one. We like going there. Fairfield Hall in Croydon is another one. You think that's a nice place to go. We've done all sorts from little tiny village halls, to Carrow Road in Norwich, and to the big one we used to do, the Colston Hall in Bristol, when it was called the Colston Hall before it changed its name. That was always a good atmosphere. But if you talk to any of the old guys about like legendary venues, it wouldn't take too long before they'd say that the Corn Exchange in Norwich, it was a cattle market, and that was the dodgiest place ever on a Saturday night. If you didn't get lynched, if you survived, then you were lucky. That was a long time ago.
Indeed, I can imagine. So tell me, if there's anyone out there listening and they think, gosh, the wrestling industry, it sounds exciting, it looks glamorous. With your 40 years of experience, what advice would you give people, perhaps, from two perspectives? First of all, going in as an announcer and as an official, or secondly, as a wrestler. What advice would you give those?
I think the golden rule would be to, if you're excited by it and want to be involved, then watch it, get a feel for it, and think, you know, I'd like to do that, and then approach one of the promoters. Go to one of the show, go to a live show, because it's different from watching it on TV. First of all, of course, get training. There are a number of quite good wrestling training schools around now. There never used to be, but there are a few, so you can go there, or just any martial arts training. Get the feel of it first of all, then approach promoter and just be useful. If you want to get involved, the way to be there is to help them set up the ring, help sell the merchandise, just be around and get a feel for it. That's the way some people get involved with it. And then, you know, if you make yourself invaluable and make yourself light as well, because remember all this image of being a wrestling superstar and being big and muscular and all that counts for a lot. But if you go in with a big ego thinking that you deserve to be there, you're not going to get very far. You, no matter how good you are, you won't get the repeat phone call if people think, oh, I didn't like him much. Yeah. He thought he was great. And that, you go in and shake hands and say hello to everyone and be humble. Then you'll go far.
It's true. And so I want to put you on the spot here. How 40 years is incredible. It's a lifetime to be doing this. How long will Lee Bamba continue, do you reckon? Until the phone stops ringing?
Pretty much. Yeah, I was thinking of that the other day. Until they don't want me anymore is the and the second bit is until I can't get in the ring anymore, until I jump out and go, ooh, that hurt. But as long as they want me to do it, and I'm very lucky because people normally say nice things anyway, and after 40 years you think, well, I must be doing something right. I think it is, as long as the phone keeps ringing and as long as people still want me to do it. As long as it doesn't change, I mean, we change with the American stuff, but as long as it doesn't change too much, because I'm still very much wanting to do your family wrestling shows, the one that you've seen and people want, because there is a whole underworld of shows where people have got barbed wire and fire and glass and all that. So if anyone rings me and says we're doing one of these, you know, street matches with light bulbs, and I'm not going to be involved in that, thank you.
Right, so very much part of that family entertainment. And as at this moment in time, here we are, 2025, just heading towards the summer. What have you got coming up? Where can people see you?
Coming up soon, we are at the Fairfield Hall in Croydon in July. Otherwise, we're at the Riverside in Hammersmith. That's coming up as well. That's going to be an exciting one to do. And then bits and pieces a bit further out, some in Essex. Going down to Salisbury for a bit, So, yeah, there's a few shows coming up, and have a look at websites and things, and come along and enjoy the wrestling, because there are so many promotions now, there's going to be a wrestling show near you somewhere.
Mm. Indeed. Lee, listen, thank you ever so much. Time has really flown by with this, and it's been fantastic to talk to you and to get your perspectives and hear your stories and everything like that. So thank you ever so much.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.